take a ride. Thank you for taking a ride on the Freedom Train Podcast series. I'm your host, Joseph Ward, and as always, ride with me is the good homie, Mr. Patrick Irvin. And remember, the Freedom Train is brought to you by PAX Inc. That's PACTSINC. And PAX Inc. is a black development organization aimed at developing the black community to its maximum potential through a focus on education and economics with a trace of hard work, honesty, and integrity. For more information, make sure you visit their website at www.pactsinc.org. When you go on the website, on the front page, you're going to see something that says Amazon Smile. There's an Amazon Smile program that when you purchase things off of Amazon and you signed up under the Smile program, you can pick a select organization to have some of your money donated to from your purchase. And from now on, you can select PAX Inc. as the organization where some of the money that you use to buy that item will go to help this organization who is working diligently in the community to help improve the community. And once again, that's PACTSINC.org. And when you're on the website, there are a whole bunch of resources from you learning about the organization as a whole, to you becoming a member, to you donating to the organization, giving you information on how to get involved with the organization. There's a Learning Center tab. Hit that drop-down box. You got a whole bunch of resources that you can take advantage of. And, of course, patronize that PAX Inc. store. So, once again, the website is www.pactsinc.org. And while you're online, make sure you visit our Freedom Train website at www.freedomtrainradio.com. We can learn more about myself, Joseph Ward, Patrick Irvin, our other podcast host, Shelby Davis, Queen Candace, and Enigma September, five of the livest podcasts you have ever heard in your life. And podcasts are available on all podcast platforms, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Radio Public, Spotify, Our Heart Radio, Your Heart Radio, We Heart Radio, They Heart Radio, all of that. Be all you got to do is just tune in. Remember, listen, share, comment, and download. 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 If you listen to the podcast, you say you want to catch that broadcast. If you ain't looking like no frog's ass, and everybody know you know that. Hey, listen, comment, share, and download. Listen, comment, share, and download. Listen, comment, share, and download. If you're trying to be somebody in life, ho. There it is. We're going platinum B.
I want multi diamond.
You don't want diamond is better than platinum. You're right. Mm-hmm. We want them outcast Garth Brooks numbers.
Who is Tony Gwynn?
You don't know who Tony Gwynn is?
Why?
Tony Gwynn is one of the greatest baseball players of all times. One of the top three greatest hitters of all time. That was his niche in the game. He was a good great all-around player, but hitting was his forte. And he's literally mastered the art of hitting. I think he may have some of the greatest hitting numbers, batting averages and things in the history of all the major league players. So Tony Gwynn was the man, black dude.
So why come I know about Ken Griffey, but I don't know about Tony Gwynn?
Because you ain't really into baseball, and Ken Griffey was popular. Tony Gwynn was popular, but Tony Gwynn was the person who, if you was not into baseball, you might not have known who he was. He was the baseball purist. He's a player for the baseball purist. He wasn't the most popular, though. So. Ken Griffey can hit, and Ken Griffey had a nice swing. Ken Griffey probably had the best swing, but Tony Gwynn hit that damn ball. He hit that ball good.
And now his son is playing baseball?
Tony Gwynn? I'm not sure. I'm going to be honest.
Gwynn Jr.
Who he play for?
The Los Angeles somebody. I think L.A. got like three teams or something.
One time for Tony Gwynn Jr., TGJ.
He make $1 million a year, so I'm guessing he's probably a double-A player or a triple-A player. Maybe not a major
maybe.
League.
Maybe. Looking,
hold on. Oh, well, he used to play. He don't play no more. He 37. Oh, okay. He played with the Dodgers in 2011. So he played from 2006, where he started in the MLB with the Milwaukee Brewers, to 2014, where he played for the Philadelphia Phillies. Batting average of .238, 7 home runs, 98 runs batted in. He also played with the San Diego Padres. So, you know, he had an interesting career with the Brewers, the Padres, the Dodgers, the Phillies, and the Nationals.
That's what's up.
Yeah.
Young Gwynn. Young Tony Gwynn out there doing this thing. You heard me? Holding it down.
Maybe you can get out of life after sports.
I know, right? He ain't nobody older than me.
Mm-hmm.
Young Gwynn. Hey, man, your pops was live and you had a prosperous career. What's up, B? Tony Gwynn Jr. Holla at you and your pops. Come on the podcast, man. Let's have a great conversation.
Tony Gwynn died in 2014, I think it was.
He did? I've been out of the baseball loop, to be honest, though.
Yeah, he died.
That's what it says?
2014.
Ah, man.
He actually died the same year his son played his last baseball game in the majors. I wonder if that has something to do with it.
You know what? I think I knew that. I just been so out the sports loop, I've been forgetting stuff.
You ain't out the sports
loop. But moment of silence for Tony Gwynn.
You mean you out of the
baseball? I mean the baseball loop. I mean, yeah, the baseball loop. That's what I mean. Yeah. So, yeah. But, yeah, man. So, I'm going to reach out to him. But, yeah, Tony Gwynn was the man. Definitely be. Hey, man, so, Pat, you like money?
Does a black man like BBWs? Yes.
BBW is as in a big black woman or a big body woman?
I thought it was a beautiful black woman.
Because you know, that's if you BBW, that's a trick question. Because you know, black there's a lot of black men who like big white girls.
But that's a BWW.
It is. See, I don't know the acronyms. I'm sorry. I messed that up. I don't know the acronym.
Big white girl. Or big white woman.
Okay.
Say this. Do black men like thick women?
Yes.
There you go. I like money like a black man like thick women.
Okay. See, that's how you know your answer is a bad answer. Because... when they throw somebody all the way off and you got to really explain it, then bring it back. Yeah.
Well, you already be talking all good. Blacks. I thought you knew your acronyms.
I guess I made it up in my mind with it. That's something different.
Well,
but okay.
Even if you mean big body woman, black men still like that.
Yeah, but, well, yeah. I was just trying to make, I was trying to see if you was talking exclusively black women or just women overall.
All right, it's dead. You killed it. You ruined it.
Thank you. Thank you. And, man, you know it's a talent, man. It's a talent, bro. You know, I've been working at this for a long time. But, man, the reason why we bring that up, because we want to have we want to start the conversation in the podcast. Several conversations we want to start, but one of them is about economics and money. And we're not approaching this conversation as if we are economic experts. But both of us have had some monetary success. And so we want to talk about economics and the ideas and the thoughts behind economics from a different standpoint. Because how you see money and how you view money, how you value money, it matters. What you were taught about money matters. What you learn about money on your way matters. And economic freedom is something that we want in the black community. Economic uprising. We want growth in our community. We want to be able to use all these trillions of dollars that they say we have, be able to use it in a in a concise way as a group, or even as critical mass, be able to use economics in a way to uplift our situation to help ourselves out and become independent. And we're self-sufficient rather than waiting on a government who don't give a shit about us to actually give a shit about us and help us out economically. You know, we know we owe reparations, but we know the American government gonna do whatever they can to not give us reparations. But the fuck can we do to make sure we empower ourselves economically? But before we get to that part, we gotta start from the basics. So, Patrick, when you was a JIT, and for those who are not from Florida, JIT mean a child. So when you was a JIT, what were you taught about money? Like, what were some of the conversations you had about money in your household?
Most of that stuff around my mom saying, just really emphasizing saving money. You know, so she was one of those people that was like, you know, she was one of those, you know, you save 30%, you put whatever aside, and then you know, you spend the rest. But the emphasis was always on, like, saving money. Make sure that you save money. Save, 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 save. So even when, like, me and my sisters got jobs in high school, the emphasis was, I know my sisters, not so much with me, but she would actually take their checks. I'm the baby. So she would actually take their checks and save money from their checks for them and, like, give them what they could spend out of their checks. And with me, she didn't do that. But, like, it was still kind of the savings was drilled into us. So I imagine was it similar for you?
Yeah, with my pops, yeah, savings. He was just always like, boy, y'all need to save. Y'all need to save money, save money, save money. I remember early in my life, you know, put your money in the piggy bank, saving money, saving money, saving money for a rainy day, save, save, save. Now, there was no real how to save or any practicality about saving. It was just saving money, saving money, saving money. And, you know, that's, I always thought that was cool that he said that, but there was no real application to it. So we never really took it serious as in saving our money. We never really understood the real why. Because it's one thing to, you can tell some kids saving money for a rainy day, but we as kids, we don't know what that means, like saving money for a rainy day like that. We're not really experiencing economic hardships like that. So that, for me, I felt like that's why it never really stuck with us. Because it was like it wasn't real. Like, all right, you telling me to save, but it don't make sense to me. It really don't make sense to me, and I wanna spend this money. So
yeah, I think that
was some of my ideas about it, though.
I think that how to anger you brought up was something that was interesting, because even though my mom did talk to us about putting the money in a savings account or something like that, like the intricacies of how money works for you and how to make it grow and what's actually happening when you put it in the savings account, or even the difference between a savings account and a checking account, those things were never really explained. Nor was it ever really explained about what you're saving for, when it's okay to stop saving,
right.
If it's okay
right.
to stop saving, you know, like, even then, you know, like, when is it okay to actually...
Different types of savings.
Right, like, so, all
right.
those things
like,
are
actually... And even in that, like, my pops is anti-investing. I'm pro-investing. He's anti-investing. My pops believe investing is somewhere where you can waste money, lose a lot of money. A lot of people I know believe that investing is a place where you can lose a lot of money or waste money. But from I have had great success on a personal level for personal goals. But overall, I'm not going to sit here and say I'm balling like that. But what I am saying is I have more money saved up or invested or just access to and through investing than I have just the simple act of, hey, save your money like that, especially with no explanation towards it. So even just that, different ideologies about what's going on, different ideologies about money. Because, you know, growing up in Christian households, too, it's like the love of money is the root of all evil. So, like, you know, what does that, how does that help? How does that hurt? What does that even mean?
Because
I remember.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, I remember having a conversation, having conversations with certain people who are so caught up in that saying that the love of money is the root of all evil, that they don't want to be prosperous. They don't want to be wealthy. They think being poor and impoverished is the way to God.
I do think, and I do agree, and I think that goes into one of the things that we were talking about, even with savings, is the amount of things out there that are being said that aren't really being adequately explained around finances and the mentality that people have regarding finances. Like, what does the, you know, the root of all evil, money is the root of all evil, what exactly does that mean? You know what I'm saying? Like, kids, that's very seldomly broken down. And even when it is, it's usually like some real generic broadband type thing. Like, people do bad things for money, and it's like, no, that's not significant enough, or that's not in depth enough to adequately explain why you would say the love of money is the root of all evil. Because a lot of good people love money too. So there's a lot going on with finances that isn't really delved into. Like, how do you grow wealth? You know, what is wealth? What's the difference between wealth and being rich? How do you grow wealth? How do you accumulate wealth? How do you start from the bottom and get here without being a rapper or a baseball player or, you know, or some sort of sports figure? You know what I'm saying? What do you do with your wealth once you get it? You hear people talking about, hey, you need to make your money work for you. How the hell do you do that? You know
what I'm saying? What does that mean? Well, okay, like the conversation we were having the other day. All right. For me, even still now, because people say, well, it's easy to make money. And it is easy to make money if you know what the fuck you're doing. You know where to start. You know where to get the resources from. You really understand everything about money. It's not easy to make money if you have no idea where the fuck to start, or even an understanding of economics and money and how things work. Like, because it's one thing to say, I made $2,000 today trading stocks. And I'm looking at you like, well, shit, you are already rich. That's how you can do that. But if there's no real communication, no real conversation, no real understanding, because looking at, I was telling you about the guy, the Wall Street Trapper. And that's somebody I would love to have a conversation with on this podcast as well. But He's telling his story about how he came from a life of crime and drug dealing to being introduced to stocks in prison, studying it, and then going and doing it. But he was introduced to some information that he hadn't heard before. And when he got introduced to the information, he started learning the information, because he was in prison, had nothing else to do but learn. So he learned information, and bam, you know, he has access to this. But it's just being exposed to this stuff. Because, like I say, you can sit down and try to chastise people all you want for not understanding the information, not having the information, but you have to realize at one point you didn't have this information too. But a great teacher always finds a way to make this information make sense to other people. And, like I said, I don't understand everything about it. I really don't understand everything about building wealth and making money, but I understand enough to now have a different view of it is easy to make money if you're willing to have the hustle to go out and do it, and you're willing to put yourself in positions to learn, or you're willing to take advantage of opportunities that are in front of you to learn.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
But I think even to that, like, when it comes to, because like you said, it's not hard to get money if you know, if you have identified your skill sets and what you're good at doing, and you've identified a market of people that's willing to pay for your skill sets and the things that you can do for them. At that point, it just becomes, you know, about offering something to that market. And seeing who bites. But, like, there are a lot of different ways to make money. There are a lot of different ways to grow wealth. And so even the people who are adverse to investing, there are other things that you could be doing to build wealth that are outside of the realm of the stock market. Like, we were talking about this yesterday. You know, you could get involved in currency exchange, which isn't exactly the same as investing in a company. You could get involved in you could get involved in real estate. You could get involved in trading government-backed securities. You could get involved in trading government debt. You know, you can get involved in so many different things. You could become an angel investor of sorts that's looking for an ROI, a real-world cashback ROI. Like, there are a bunch of different things you could do in order to make your money work for you. Like, the finance sector is so large, the sector of the economy that deals right. with utilizing money to make more money, is so large that there is a place in it for everybody. Like, so you just got to find out what you're interested in, where you want to be.
So, who introduced you to some information? Some for like your first introduction to like financial information, things that made sense.
Well, after my mom, and my dad did impart some things to me, but it was really in the military. I met up with a senior mass sergeant. He had an Infiniti truck. It was a nice truck too, all white, white shit, real nice truck. And I was like, "Yo, I'm trying to get like you." And he was like, and I was like, "Man, I can't wait till I get to be a senior master sergeant." And he was like, "I ain't got this because I'm a senior master sergeant. I got this because I know how to work my money." And I was like, "Well, shit, teach me, oh great one." You know, and so he
right.
was kind of
because what does that mean?
Right, right. He was kind of my introduction to a lot of things in the finance world. He was another one. He invested, but he wasn't big on investing. And one of the reasons why I'm big on like trading government debt, bonds and stuff like that is because that's what he was big into. You know, government debt, government bonds, stuff like that. You know, he had his little real estate thing going on. And then he had a couple of other businesses where he was a consultant and they were paying him. And he, you know, he was very much in the information business. It wasn't just about the financial markets. He moved in a lot of information circles where he was getting paid pretty decently for knowing things, you know, knowing how to do certain things, knowing people. But, you know, chief in all of that was taking his money and knowing what to do with it once he got it. So he had his system worked out where, you know, he would take a percentage of his income and put it in government debt. He would take a percentage of his income and put it in this security and in this thing and in this thing. And then he had his real estate thing going on. And all of those things, even as he was putting money into them, was also growing and putting more money back into his pocket. So he was involved in the, like, five or six different things, but it was all what you would consider like passive income. So, because he wasn't like actively trading in anything, you know. So, but he really started, he was the first person that really started breaking stuff down for me on a financial level. Like, this is compound interest. This is what a dividend is. This is what you do with this. This is how you use this. And he would even be like, this is how I use this. Other people do it this way. And so even in that, it was invaluable because it wasn't just like his philosophy. It was like, this is what I do, but there are other ways to do it too. Other people do it this way. Like, this person does it this way, and this person does it this way. And he would always end with, and shit, you never know. Like, you might find some new way to do it yourself that I ain't never even thought about before. So, you know, even in that, it wasn't like he was just telling me what to do. He was just telling me, like, this is how this works. Now you can figure out how to make it work for you however you want to figure it out. But he got me into even the different ways of using insurance and things of that nature. He got me into all of that stuff, and I'm forever grateful to him for it. I haven't talked to him in about 10, 15 years now, maybe. About 10 years now.
Right.
But, yeah, he was pivotal in introducing me to all of that stuff. Pivotal. Great guy. Anyways, yeah.
Nah, that's cool, because for me, the homie Fred Sweet helped me out. Fred was in the amp. Yeah, we did a minute ago. We need to do a follow-up. But he was into Amway at the time. And, you know, young, broke college student, looking for different ways to make money. I was working at the Goodwill. So Fred was like, come check out these meetings. So I would go check out the meetings, and they would be talking about building wealth, you know. But young black dude looking at these white dudes, it's like, well, yeah, y'all white. Y'all supposed to build wealth. But still listening to what they're saying. And then they recommended a book list. And so listening to the information they're saying, reading the books off the book list, we took a trip to Columbus, Ohio to a convention and got to actually meet some real millionaires. I didn't want to do Amway because my thought then was, you know, because the MLM, they want you to pay a certain percentage every month, pay this and pay this and pay that. I was like, well, and I can't take that money and start my own business. But at that time, I had no idea what I wanted to do as far as start the business. I didn't even really understand all of the financial information, but the self-help information made sense. And some of the concepts in the financial information made sense, but it still didn't all the way click to me. Like, I didn't, like, the stuff with the stocks and real welfare, it probably really didn't click until like 5 years ago with me. But practical app and practical application, like when I started my businesses and stuff, you know. So, but it was still from a standpoint of I don't really get this because it don't make sense because I don't relate to the way you're teaching me. But as I grew older and as I got access to more resources, I got access to more people who build wealth, but then seeing people who come from environments that I come from who speak the way I speak and can break it down the way I understand, it started making better sense. But also seeing different ways that people can make money. Going from switching the mindset of I have to go to college, get a job, and that's the way I build wealth. If I get a good job, they give me a good job and keep giving me raises, I could be rich. Or if I'm an athlete or entertainer. So, like, you know, you can't be mad at kids wanting to be athletes and entertainers because those are the wealthy people that they see. Not saying those are the only people, but those are the largest groups of wealthy people in Black America. No, these are the groups of people that we see. But then when I read the book, The Millionaire Mind, you know, The Millionaire Next Door, and he broke down how a school teacher can become a millionaire and how many school teachers were millionaires. Start reading more books like that, more books on real finances and real wealth, and starting having more conversations. I was like, well, shit, okay, I'm late to the game, but as long as I'm not dead, that means I still got time to build my shit up. And so you put me on them apps and stuff, and I started investing. And like I said, I have more money now through investing than I ever had in my whole life saving. So it's just these conversations about economics, man. They are huge. Like, I want to get my little brothers on investing in stocks. Now I know it's gonna be a fight with my pops because they don't really get it. But if I can get them to like and just invest $10 a damn month or something like that, maybe that's something that's maybe doable. But now these conversations about money, this shit's got to make sense though.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, like, the apps and shit have definitely made things easier. But it still is one of those things where, like, you know, you got to be excited. You got to be interested in it. And I think everybody's interested in making money. And I think one of the things is it's become easy to, like, so, like, when you're training for a sport, right, like, it's you know what you need to do. You know, if you're playing basketball, you know that you need to, you know, work on your shot, work on your D, work on your handles. You know what you need to do. Work on your stamina. But it's clear cut, and it's easy to understand. Because the people that are playing those sports at a high level and coaching those sports at a high level, they speak common language. It's not a lot of jargon. But when it comes to finance and investing and the whole money conversation, the jargon is complex, it's different, it's vastly different than the way we speak regularly. And there ain't a lot of people out there that's really, like, interpreting the shit for us, you know what I'm saying? But then even to that, the topics are so complex. And one of the interesting things when we start talking about, especially, like, the money and business versus, like, sports, the more intellectual pursuits versus the sports pursuits, is it's interesting because sports is complex as shit. But nobody really talks about how complex it is. They just talk about it. And by virtue of that, nobody's scared of it. But when you start talking about finances and shit, go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, because they don't really see the intricacies of sports. They just see the results of sports. And so to them, that's why it's a bit, in my opinion, that's why it's a bit different for them.
I would agree with that. But, you know, like the thing I'm getting at, though, is the way people talk about sports makes it seem accessible, even though it's really not. Like, you got a better chance of being financially successful by starting a business or investing your money than you do at becoming a professional sports star. The numbers bear that out. You have a better chance being successful in the intellectual pursuit than a physical pursuit.
Yeah. Yeah, you do.
But because we talk about the intellectual pursuits and the investing and the financing pursuits, and we label them as complicated and we make them seem so difficult, people actually gravitate towards the harder way to make money because we talk about it like it's not that difficult. You know, we talk about basketball like every kid can go to the NBA. You can't. You just can't. How many, what are there, like less than, there's less than 100 people in the NBA right now, like active players, right? Or what's the number? What is it, like less than 200, 300?
No. It's 32 teams. You got 32 teams, 12 on each roster. What that is. Do your math real quick.
Do my math.
32 times 12.
32
teams, 12 people on each roster. That's 384 people. 384 players.
So that's less than 400 people are actually going to make it onto an NBA roster. Now, out of the literally millions and millions and millions of children out there that actually have a dream of making it to the NBA, and we're not just talking about in America at this point, we're talking about globally, you know, with the NBA. Even if you want to talk about the NFL, which has a larger amount of people that are involved, because the teams are exponentially bigger, you're still looking at in terms of the millions and millions and millions of kids that are trying to get to the NFL, you're still looking at like a small, I think that and the numbers have been broken down countless times, you're looking at less than 5% of the kids that actually try to be successful at these endeavors are actually going to make it in these endeavors.
Right, but even though, like, in essence of the conversation, these kids are still not prepared to build wealth. Even though these kids are some of these kids are going to make it to the league, but they're in positions to build wealth, but they don't have any knowledge and any know-how to build wealth, and they are vulnerable to being scammed out by cats who know wealth better than them because nobody ever decided to prepare them for that. Because all they wanted you to do is make it, not keep it.
But that's the second part of the conversation, all right? Because what we're talking about, what I'm talking about now is basically how kids are drawn to sports because they view it as easily accessible, even though it's not as accessible as business or finance or something like that.
But it's easier to get started in.
Well, but I don't even know if it's easier to get started in.
Think about it from this standpoint. I can go join any city league football team. I can go join any city league basketball team, and I can suck and still get playing time. We've both seen that with our own eyes.
Right.
So that's what I mean by like getting started in the sport, not necessarily getting started on a professional level. But any kid can jump up any day, say, "Mom, I want to play baseball," and go out there and suck.
But
so, go ahead.
I was gonna say, but anybody can also start a business. Anybody can also take $20
right.
and throw it into the stock market. Like, so I don't even, and you can do that like right from your cell phone. You ain't even gotta go nowhere. So I don't.
No, you're right. You're right.
I don't know that sports is more accessible in any capacity in terms of making money off it. You're right. Anybody can go play, but in terms of
right.
making money off of it, I don't. I think sports is one of the most inaccessible, difficult endeavors to send your kids on as far as a money making endeavor. But again, even in all of this, we're talking about money making endeavors. We're talking about economic offense. When we start talking about economic defense, which just like sports, defense is where you win championships. Economic defense is where you become wealthy. And so you're right in that. Even if you do make it in pro sports, if nobody's ever talked to you about playing economic defense,
you're not gonna,
keeping money,
yeah.
you're going to be broke.
You're not going to build wealth. You're going to have high income and not keep any money. But depends on the lifestyle that you live. You can go broke. Like what they had, the series broke. They've had series about it. They've had plenty, countless articles and just countless studies on, especially black athletes going broke for thinking that they have to take care of everybody. But that's a whole other notion when it comes to wealth in the black community. Is now this black person has wealth. It's this person's job to take care of everybody else. When that's not the case. It's not that it's one person's job to take care of everybody. This one person can help, can be an asset, but it's not their job to take care of the hood or the family. But it's the way that's another thing that frustrates me about finances or building up in the black community or the lack thereof is just our overall perceptions about money and wealth and just taking care of people or the way that we live or growing money. Because we're more, a lot of us are more satisfied with just looking like we have money or making a lot of money, even though you might be in debt. You might make $100,000 a year, but you got $200,000 worth of debt because of the lifestyle that you want to live, because you want to look like you have more money than what you have, versus people who are actually building wealth. But also understanding the conditioning that goes into it with black people. We are playing catch up, but I want us to play economic offense smarter and from a better angle and be able to build better. Like neither one of my parents, well, my pops is more cognizant about his credit. My mom's don't even think about her damn credit. Like I said, neither one of them are into stocks. Investing in things like that. My pops is more so the hard work. You got to work. You got to do physical labor. Like the idea of residual or income that you don't have to work. But, you know, you work one time and you keep getting residuals for it. Like, that's not something that's thought of in my family. And so I feel kind of I be frustrated a lot because there's not many people that I can talk to or that kind of feel exactly where I'm coming from, because I feel like I'm at the bottom of a pit trying to crawl out, but I got minimal resources to help me crawl out this pit. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but I think I would only disagree with you on one angle, and it's not even really a disagreement. It's just a different perspective. I don't want black people to take economic offense more seriously, because I feel like we do take that more seriously. I want black people to take economic defense more seriously. And when we start talking about, like, long-term investments, you know, we start talking about things like that, we're talking about, like, keeping your money or making your money work for you, storing your money, saving your money. Even if we start talking about, like, credit conversation. I hate the credit system we have here in America. I hate the fact that you don't get a chance to opt out of it. I hate the fact that one bad decision can ruin you for years, even if you made a million good decisions before it. I hate the fact that there is no real way to kind of have a real conversation with the people giving you credit. There might have been extenuating circumstances. And there, I'm not saying there are no mechanisms in place to where you can talk about those extenuating circumstances with a potential creditor. But all of that is on the strength of the creditor being somebody that understands that those things are possible, because a lot of creditors will simply say, you don't qualify. I don't care why. And so my credit score being decent, I hate the fact that it's something that I even have to think about or concern myself with. Like, if I could have opted out of it, I would have opted out of it. Now, all of that being said, we do live in a world where credit is a thing. So you do have to concern yourself with it, and like everything else in this economic system, there's a way to utilize credit in order to make money, in order to save money, and in order to make it easier for you to accumulate wealth. And so all of those are, but to me, all of those are economically defensive maneuvers. Like, all of that is about keeping money in your pocket or growing the money that's already in your pocket. It's not necessarily about going out and making more money. I feel like black people spend too much time focused on, like, how much money am I making? And like you said, I do agree with what you said about people being caught up in what you're making, because there were times where I was making $30,000, $40,000 a year, but I could afford to go do things that somebody that was making 3-4 times my salary couldn't afford to do, because I had a savings and they didn't. Like, they were tapped out. Right. Every single dollar of every single paycheck they got was spent and accounted for, and a bunch of monthly fluff that they didn't really need. You know, they got a super expensive car note. They got an overly expensive mortgage. You know, they got this, they got this, they got this, and those are just like what they feel like are the essentials. Then, you know, I bumped into people that had wardrobe expenses where they were spending, and I'm shitting you not, they would spend $500-$700 a month on clothes every single month. You know, and I know that there are people out there that are spending exponentially more than even that on clothes every single month. You know, I know that there are people out there spending $1,000, $2,000 a month just on clothes. You know, and you go,
yeah, I
know
people that are
spending $2,000.
So that's that investment.
Right.
Like, because you wanna be spending money on things that bring money back to you.
Right.
If you're going to be spending money. And a lot of us are caught up in just spending. Because, you know, you got the song. I spend it back and get it right back. So you got me, people with that mentality right now, like, I get it right back, instead of like, I can compound on this. I can make this more and put this somewhere where it will grow and grow and grow. But that's just not the mentality. The mentality is spend, spend, spend. And once again, we understand there's a conditional aspect that goes to that, but also we do have the power to change some of the ways that we view money, view wealth, view the look of wealth, because we want to look like we have money. We want that look. But
right. What
does it matter to look like you have money if your ass broke?
Right.
It ain't fun being broke.
It is not. It is really not. Like, I was... And we've heard a lot of people say it before, and I can attest to it because, you know, at least for me, it's true. Like, so I've had money. I've been fortunate enough to be one of the people that can say that I've legitimately had money. And I've also been broke. Having money is better. Like, and everybody says it because it's true. Like,
it's
and
true.
We all understand it on an emotional level. We understand it on a logical level, but I'm not sure many of us understand it on an emotional level. And the reason I say that is because a lot of people that don't have money aren't taking the steps necessary to get money.
Hey man, look, I'm not going to say that I've had the type of money that you've had, but I will say from where I've been, I would take being wealthy over being poor or in poverty. Any damn, that's a no-brainer. I wouldn't even let you finish your sentence. Would you rather, rich, rich, bitch, rich, yes. Because, but also with understanding how I can, like, because a lot of people talking about they want to help people. Remember, you can't help nobody till you help yourself. So if I have access to more resources, I can help more people. Like, I can show more people how to get out of this shit. If I become a millionaire, the people around me, if you're not a millionaire after I become a millionaire, that's because you're full of shit. Because I'm gonna hold the secrets from you. Because, you know, you talked about it before, like having, like, when we get some new information, one of the first things we do is tell our homies, tell the people in our circle, hey, check this out, do this, do that, because we want our whole circle to be full of millionaires. That's the goal, for the whole circle to be full of millionaires. But we have to get an understanding of economics that works best for us. I say that.
Yeah, I agree. But I do think, like, again, there's this emotional disconnect where, because a lot of people talk about saving money and blah, blah, but until you, economic defense is hard because it's not fun. And I know a lot of, and I'm not attacking people for wanting to have fun. I understand people's lives are stressed out. They got a lot going on, and they feel like they deserve to unwind and this, that, or the third. But it's the same thing, like I tell the kids that I'm working with. Look, you got two choices in life. You can work hard, save up, so that you can enjoy yourself later on in life a lot more, or you can enjoy yourself a little bit now and pay for it like a motherfucker later. Like, but every period of enjoyment has to be paid for. The question is, like, when are you willing to pay? And if you're willing to pay for it now, then the growth that you'll experience later will be so much more worth it, because the amount that you paid in now will grow and be worth so much more later. Like, it'd be like buying something now. It'd be like buying something now when it's on sale, and but you can't get it right now. But you can order it right now, but they're not done making it right now. But they're giving it to you on a discount because you're pre-ordering. You're ordering early. But you got to wait a little bit. You know, versus, all right, something just came out, and now everybody's in a rush to get it, and the only way to get it is to pay a scalper who got the prices jacked up on it. Like, I know logically we would all say, well, I'm going to pre-order it and save money and I can wait. But then when it comes to actually, like, practically doing it, everybody makes moves in their real life like they're just going to get it when a scalper comes and they cool with paying an extra $200-$300. I know that's a weird, funky analogy. I didn't prepare it up front, so that's why it's weird and funky. But I feel like it still conveys the message, right? So we got to get in a position as a community, not just as individuals, but as a community and as individuals, of course, where we're like, I'm cool with not having this right now. I'm cool with working right now. I'm cool with putting money aside right now, because I know that in the future, you know, the $1,000 that I put aside today might be $10,000 tomorrow. And now I can spend a lot more money than if I would have just put the $1,000. So I think there needs to be like a mentality shift. You know what I'm saying? Like,
because I'm on my taxes, so I got to get my shit done before Wednesday. I'm getting it done on Wednesday. My thing this year was, you know what? I don't even know how much I'm gonna get back at this point, but what I do know is, I think I'm just drop the whole thing. Just invest the whole damn thing. Just invest the whole thing. Cause hell, I ain't using it now. Well, if I'm not in a position, I wouldn't put like this. Hopefully I'm in the position to invest the whole thing. But if I'm not in the position to invest the whole thing, of course, you know, I'm gonna get the equipment that I need, and the rest invest. I just wanna see it grow. That's all I want. I just wanna see it grow. I just want to see it make me more money. But, bro, like, for those people who don't invest, there's some stocks, the stocks that you buy, or, like, the share of the companies that you buy, a lot of times some of them have what they call dividends, where when they make profit. They pay their investors for investing. So you get dividends. And when I see in my email that you've received dividends, you're seeing that like 3 or 4 times a week. And you're starting to see them dividends add up. You're starting to see the amount of money the value of that portfolio, you start to see it increase and increase and increase and increase. And you're like, well, shit, I like this because I'm putting money into it. But the money that I'm putting into it is literally doing what them people said that's making me money. Like, I like this shit. Because for me, I have to do a better job of focusing on what I want to do to build wealth. Because I'm the person that'll either be doing something and I get an idea, I see something else, and I just jump and jump and jump. So that's why, you know, when you and I was having the conversation the other day, I kind of had to check myself. Because I'm like, man, when I went back and looked at the money that I had from investing, I was like, why am I not concentrating more on investing? Why am I not putting more of my time in learning more about investing and becoming better at investing? Because hell, I'm already doing it and I'm already seeing the benefits from it. So master this shit. Don't stop trying to bounce around and master this shit. But because it's helping me get a better understanding of economics.
Yeah. I think one of the things that, because I think that's something we all have to, because everybody wants to, you know, everybody wants to do everything. You know what I'm saying? Like, everybody wants to have their hands in every pot. And, you know, it's one of them things where even with me, like, there are times where I have to sit back and be like, yo, all right, you know, so I've gotten trained to focus on one thing at a time. So at the current moment, I'm kind of locked in on, you know, like, learning everything I can about Forex. I know I'm late to the party. Somebody brought it up to me years and years and years back, and I just waved it off, you know, because at the time I was doing stocks, I had a bunch of other things going on, and I was straight. I didn't really, you know, like, I wasn't really looking for nothing new. And the person that brought it to me in the form of like an MLM, which I was really not trying to get involved in no shit like that. So I was like, nah, I'm good. But then, you know, like I said, I think it was maybe like a year or so, it was 4 months ago that you brought it back up. And you was like, hey.
The Susu?
No, not Susu, Forex.
Yeah.
You know, you brought it back up. And you was like, hey, Pat, you know about Forex? What do you think about it? And I told you what I thought. And then you was like, well, I'm looking into it. And I was like, well, shit, let me look back into it, too. And it was the first time I ever, like, really looked at it, you know, as, like, a actual thing and not, like, a part of a part of an MLM plan or something like that. And I was like, yo, this is so of late. For the last few months, I've literally been focused on that, just learning that. But as far as, you know, the Susu thing, I'll be honest, I don't see. And I know there's that TED Talk going around about Susus as well right now.
Kill a black dude, yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't watched it, I saw it.
I didn't watch it, so I don't know what his perspective is. But I'm going to be honest. I don't see where it's beneficial unless you're dealing with a bunch of people that can't save money. Like, if y'all just,
well,
if everybody just struggles to save money, then it makes sense. But if you can save money, I don't see where there's a benefit to you in joining a Susu.
Well, this, because I remember you and somebody else had a conversation with about the Susu, and then I did some searching online. But, like, the original Susu was group economics. People put money in the pot every month, and a different month, let's say if it's 10 people or 12 people in the group, each month somebody will get the pot of money, and it's to help people finance, and it's to help, it's group economics. Now, there's something else going out, like the flower thing, that some of it may be, I think there's some that's going out that's Susu and some that's not, and I'm not confused, but it's kind of like, I can't really explain the whole thing, but there is a SUSU, which is classic black group economics, black people pulling their money together to help each other versus this other thing that is out there that mirrors a SUSU but isn't necessarily a full SUSU.
Well, to me, I'm a big fan of whatever you put your money in, you need to make it work for you. All right, period. So anything that's why even with like taxes, like I do my taxes in such a way that it's even if like if I'm getting paid and I got to fill out like an I-9 or something, a W-9, I'm sorry, or something, I want to get more of my check, more of my tax money in my check. And if I qualify to get a tax return, get a smaller tax return, or even maybe have to potentially pay more back if I don't. Because I want that extra money in each one of my paychecks, because if I get those bigger paychecks, I can put more of that money aside and make it grow for me. While your money sitting with the federal government is not working for you. You're not building no interest on it. So I'd rather get a bigger paycheck and a smaller refund, or even potentially, like I said, have to pay more and during tax season, than to collect a smaller check and get a bigger refund, or, you know, have to pay less during tax season, because now I got more money to put aside on a monthly basis. I have the same feeling about SUSUs. If I'm giving you $10, if there are 10 of us in a SUSU, and we all put in $10 a month, then on that 11th month or that 10th month or however it's set up, you know, I collect $100. Well, that's the same as me saving $10 a month. Every month. Like, it's literally the exact same thing. I'd rather keep my money and be able to invest it myself, because in the SUSU, it's not growing for me. I'm going to just get the $100. Whereas if I have the money set aside for myself, I'm able to do whatever I want with that money, and I'm able to collect interest or whatever I choose to do with that money. So even if you if you're talking about a SUSU like, you know, you were talking about, where the money is being invested in something and people are getting an overestimated or overinflated return on their investments, so everybody puts in $20 or $10, but instead of getting $100 out, everybody gets $120 or $130 back. And now you're talking about me getting a 30% return on my investment, which is very substantial. Now I'm looking at, okay, how is that sustainable? Do I have to keep bringing in new members to pay old members? Well, that's a Ponzi scheme, and that's illegal. You know what I mean? And it's not sustainable. What happens when you don't get any new members in and you can't pay out anybody? Who gets paid? So that's a lot of my issue with. But a lot of these things, like, you know, when it comes to group economics and all of this other stuff, even if it's not a scam, if you're serious about playing economic defense, you don't want to put your money or allow your money to be placed somewhere where you can't get anything for it.
If you invest your money in things that can make money for you. So, like, but you also have to know your lane and stay in your lane. So I tell people all the time, like, for somebody like a Lil Wayne, it's smart for Lil Wayne to invest his money in recording equipment and things to make music. Because Lil Wayne can make albums that will continue to make him money. So Lil Wayne is going to be making money when he's dead. Because he was able to, he had a talent that was able to put him in a position to create something one time that would yield residual income for a while. So Lil Wayne and his family going to eat off that. Just like Tupac did this in 97, but still making money off the albums and stuff. Right. So, all right, you don't make music. You don't play sports. You ain't entertaining. You can't act or none of that shit. But you can do something. You have a talent. What is your talent? And how can you use that talent to bring you back residual income? That should be the thought process of everybody. It got to be. And I was community in the black community. That's how we got to be thinking. I had to switch my shit over to that. Like I told you, with the link up group the other day, one of our tasks was to write down all of our skills. Hell, I wrote down 21 skills that I have. And then I started thinking to myself, Now I should be making way more money. I should have way more money coming in now. If I can consciously sit down and write down 21 fucking skills, I should be making way more money. So still with me learning more and still shit clicking on to bring in more money and be better at creating wealth. But there are humps that we have to get over because shit, we ain't been taught properly.
Right, and so that's where, like, you, the taught piece is where, because if I can go back to Susu's for a moment, just for a moment, because there was something I thought about after I finished. The reason why Susu's are popular in African nations is because they don't typically have access to financial services. And typically, they don't have enough money to open a bank account. So it makes sense for a bunch of people in a really, really dollar-poor community, because we don't want to say resource-poor because they have resources, but in a dollar-poor community, it makes sense for 20 people to get together, put in the amount of money that they can put in regularly, and then for the collector to store that money in a bank account that is going to act as some sort of savings device for the entire group, because individually they can't afford to do that. Here in America, we don't have that problem. But that goes into the education piece again. Like being understanding why certain things were created and why they're used, and if that's something that actually benefits you. And that goes again into knowing your lane. Like black people in America, Susu isn't necessarily in your lane, because let's be real, right? Even the poorest black person here in America, the person that's making $19,000 a year, and we looking at them like, damn, bro, you only making $15,000 a year. Damn, bro, you only making $15,000 a year. That person is rich, comparatively speaking, to most of the rest of the world. They just broke as shit here in America. But in the rest of the world, they balling out of control. Most of the world. Now, you know, not counting the wealthy countries, but most people don't live in a wealthy country. We oftentimes overestimate the actual population size of so-called developed nations. The majority of people don't live in what we would call a first world country. So that's the other thing about Susu's. But the education piece, again, is where we go back to the conversation about how do we speak about certain things? Like, how are we groomed to talk about certain things? I've seen people go into a level of depth and detail about sports that I'm like, yo, that is crazy that you know that much depth about this game. Even like with boxing, when you listen to guys talk about feigning and changing the speed and the power and the timing of their punches to throw there, the amount of psychological warfare and all that going on there is crazy. But these same people will look at you cross-eyed when you start talking about finance. And it's like, no, you can get it because I just watched you give an amazing breakdown of a football play.
But see, that's where, as a teacher, and that's one of my talents that I was able to develop over the last 10 years. So I would take that person and I'm going to use football to help you understand economics. Mm-hmm. Just that simple. Because you ain't stupid.
Yeah, no.
So I'm gonna use football to help you understand economics.
And that's one of the things where I'd be like, there's no way you could tell me that like these black kids from the hood are retarded. Do you listen to them talk about the sports they love? The level of detail they go into? You know, I didn't listen to 12, 13 year old kids from the hood explain to me why Steph Curry step back jumper, or not Steph, James Harden step back jumper is so deadly. And they can spend 30 minutes breaking down every single muscle twitch and why it's necessary and how it works. This is not a stupid individual that can do this. This is not a stupid individual. So why can't they learn about compound interest? You know, why can't they learn what ROI means? Why can't they learn how to analyze a financial document? You know, how to look at spreadsheets, how to create spreadsheets. Kids will look at me and be like, man, I don't, that Google Sheets, that Excel stuff, man, that shit's complicated. Are you serious right now? I just listened to you give an hour-long speech about why the Dallas Cowboys weren't going to win the Super Bowl. End up as shit. There's no way Excel is too complicated for you. Stop it. But the education
right.
Part, again.
But,
sorry, go ahead.
Right. But you have to, for somebody who knows, so if you're on the side of people who know economics and you can teach it, you have to find a way to make it make sense to people who it really don't make sense to most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can do that, you're good.
But I mean, finance is something, not to drag this out. I know we kind of ended up just talking randomly about finance in a bunch of different circles, but I guess that's how it be sometimes, I guess. But it's something we do got to get more serious about. It's something that we do have to start thinking about. And I honestly, Joe, I don't know how to get people to flip that switch from understanding that, yeah, I get you want to party, you want to have fun, I get you feel entitled to do it, and I get that you do need to blow off steam. I get all of that. But you also need to be, and no but, because the but discounts everything you said previously. I'll say you also need to understand the necessity and the importance of saving money and putting stuff aside that works for you. You know, so that in the future you will be safe, and in the future when you decide you want to retire, you don't have to work until your 70s, 80s, and 90s because you got something set aside. Like, I don't know how to get people to flip that switch, being totally honest.
I mean, that's something they have to want to do. I can't, that's all I know. I don't like being broke. I don't like being poor. I've been doing this shit too long. It's not fun. So I've been always looking for different ways that make sense to me that I can actually build wealth. So I found things too through my talents. I have these specific talents, and I know I can do these things to help build my wealth. This is not something we're gonna argue with anybody about. Make sure that they know for themselves. I mean, it's on you. But we will say that this is the first of many conversations we're going to have about wealth and economics, and especially within our family and the black community, to make sure that we are at least doing our part to get information and resources out to help black people build wealth. So this is, like I said, this conversation is to get it going. But from here, we want to talk more about wealth, about getting it in, about becoming millionaires, man. That's real. Let's do this.
Ole do it.
Man, you got any parting shots, my man?
Power to the people. I'm taking it back.
Power to the people. My parting shot is I get money. Get your money, man. We up out this piece. We're holla. It went through a tunnel. That's what happened.